With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Posting and Toasting Show. I'm Drew. Schwinn's here. What up, Schwinn?
What up, what up, what up?
All right. And we have with us our favorite teenage NBA contributor.
Sensational.
Sensational. He podcasts for Gotham Sports. And are you still doing your thing with Macri?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so he's doing his thing with Knicks Film School and Macri. He also writes for Gotham Sports. It's our favorite redhead, Jeremy Cohen. Cohen, what up, buddy?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Just doing what every cool person does, is record a NBA podcast in September in the middle of a Thursday night.
Well, I'm glad to be here, at least.
Are you really?
You know,
Drew slid into my DMs begging me to come on the show, and I was like, I'll move some things around. And then he told me that you were going to be on it, Schwinn, because I thought it might be a guest host. And I was like, nah, fuck it. I don't really want to be here. And then I finally gave in. I was like, all right, you know what?
You had already committed.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, everyone knows, like, once you lock down a commitment, you have to do it absolutely, even if it's like, you know, you don't like it or anything like
that.
True.
That's definitely how it works for people in New York City. Everybody's so committed to everything they say they're going to do.
Yeah, we don't flake.
All right.
Yep. So, I'm not in New York City. I'm in the great city of Brookline, Massachusetts. So
you're in Boston. Let's get this on the record. Drew keeps saying he's in Brookline. Nobody gives a shit. He's in fucking Boston. He's a traitor, and he loves fucking New England clam chowder and literally drinks it every day.
I bathe in New England clam chowder. I love the cream, the creaminess of it. It's really good for my skin, and it's really great for my pores on my face.
Injects it into his veins.
Oh, it's, yeah, just straight through the, just like my toes, like a real fucking heroin addict. Just like, get it in there. So, for, today's episode, we realized that we never really discussed, like, the off-season of the NBA, and just, like, we're just kind of reflecting on it today, just kind of before coming on, and we're just like...
In fairness to us, much like the greater NBA media, it's just so amazing to talk about the Knicks offseason. You know, it's like the only offseason that mattered was the Knicks offseason, apparently. But there are 29 other NBA teams.
Yeah.
And they deserve their time. You know, they deserve it.
Yeah. So on the Posting and Toasting Show, the website Concentrate on the Knicks, we're going to talk about the Atlantic Division. And we're going to focus on like the offseason for like Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Boston, in Toronto, not the Washington Wizards. I just discovered that probably 5 minutes ago that the Wizards are not in the Atlantic Division. So we're going to focus on these teams, talk about their offseason, because just in general, the NBA offseason was absolutely bonkers. And we just really need to like process the idea. Like the landscape is like pretty much completely changed.
Yeah, and there was so much like incest in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, like there's tons of players moving around and everything like that. So we really want – so we're going to focus on that. We're not going to talk about the Knicks offseason. I think we've done that for all our episodes.
I mean, we're probably going to talk about the Knicks offseason.
We'll get to it because we don't know if Jeremy has had any takes on it, so we'll definitely need that. But we're going to go in alphabetical order, and our first stop is Boston. So The main moves Boston did was they lost Kyrie Irving. They replaced him with Kemba Walker on, I think, was it on like the 4-year max?
Yeah, it's a 4-year max.
Yeah, 4-year mm-hmm. max.
Just they an signed, amazing, amazing negotiation.
Yeah, I can only imagine the negotiation with Danny Ainge. He's like, listen, Kemba, I got to be play it real with you. I can only give you 4 years and the max. What do you say?
Like, is it 160? Is that what it is? 150 or something like that?
Sure. Let's just say it's 158. Someone on Twitter will correct us if we're wrong. So,
and he gave him a player option.
Oh, did he get a player option though?
I think so.
I didn't know that.
Wow. So he has a player option and a max?
Thanks. It's according to Early Bird Rights.
Okay, we'll go.
Is that better than Spotrac, by the way?
I find it to be, yeah, because he actively updates it. Jeff Siegel, I believe it is, and I've preferred it personally, but you know, we'll see as the season goes on because things change.
So look at that, we're dropping knowledge out here for all.
Yeah, everyone go to Early Bird Rights now for all your for your contract information and no longer Spotrac. Get them out of here. So they got Kemba. They signed as a primary option.
Oh, yeah. Just to clear it up, it's 4 years, $141 million.
That's still a lot of money, no matter how you cut it. And their next big move, which was, you know, primary option number one, was Enes Kanter at center. I didn't even know how much money he got, but he was a number one. Yeah, he was a number one target for the Celtics. That was the main offseason moves. I don't really know who they drafted. I don't really care who they drafted and really anyone else. But, like, they lost Kyrie and Al Horford, who were
– They lost Morris. They lost Morris.
Yeah, like, they lost, like, foundational players on their team.
I mean, they lost Rozier. Like, look, obviously I don't think Rozier is amazing. But, like, they legit lost five guys that – were major contributors in their rotation last year. And, like, sure, they had a disappointing year. But, like, they won, what, 49 games? So, I mean, they weren't total shit. They were – I mean, if anything, like, they were just disappointing, right? Because they allegedly had all this amazing talent. Maybe that speaks to the general public, like, overvaluing their young talent, whatever. That's neither here nor there. But, yeah, they lost these guys and – You know, what did they do this summer? It's like they brought in Kemba to replace Kyrie, and then they brought in Enes to, I guess, replace Baines?
I guess so.
And then they lost Horford, and they lost Morris. And so, like, they replaced Horford, I guess you can argue, with – so they signed the backup center for France's national team for mm-hmm. all of us idiots that have been watching the World Cup of basketball at, like, 8:30 in the morning, Vincent Poirier. But, you know, he's probably better than Enes, to be honest. So, I mean, not a high bar to clear, but
– Yeah, that's not a high one.
And then I think they still have Tice, right?
They do.
Yeah, but, like, their four spot is a fucking shit show. They don't have anybody there. They don't have any, like, even Morris, look, he's not a natural four, but, you know, in the modern NBA, you can definitely shift him down there, and he's totally fine. If his best minutes in his career have come as a four. So, you know, that's definitely a big loss for them.
Yeah, but they have, like, Semi Ojeleye, though.
They do. I actually, to be honest, okay, look, Ojeleye is somebody I think I actually like him.
And I know we're joking, but he's actually, like, a solid role player.
No, I actually like him. And I think that he's one of those guys. What, he just finished his second year in his career, right? Yeah. He came to Tatum. It's like that guy with the three ball he's Jamichael Green, but better. Easily, in my opinion. So, like, I think he could be a legit player. I don't know if he is. But, like, at the same time, he's not a guy that you want eating – more than maybe 20 minutes a game, 25 max this season, right? And, like, their other options at the four are, what, Tatum and Hayward? And, like, I don't know, man. I don't think Tatum has he's not physically ready for that yet. I don't see it. It doesn't look like he's added any significant weight since he's come into the league. Maybe he just doesn't have, you know, the metabolism or the frame or whatever it is, but he looks the same when I've seen him in the World Cup. So I don't know about that. And then Hayward is just not a four, man. I know, like, small ball is a thing, but you know, even within small ball, you want a certain level of size, and Hayward is more of like, he's more of a 2-3 wing rather than a 3-4, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think
small ball isn't even really happening much that, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it seems that a lot of teams are deciding to go big instead of shifting that small ball, because I feel like a lot of teams are trying to counter with the Warriors in terms of like, oh, they're going small, we should do the same thing. Now, when you look across the league, a lot of these teams are going big, and like, you know, Philly or even the Knicks or the Nuggets, just a bunch of teams are deciding to load up on 4-5s and not playing small, which is where I think the Celtics could be at a disadvantage.
Even the Lakers kind of did, right?
Like, yeah,
they traded for AD, and then they signed DeMarcus, and they signed McGee, and then DeMarcus got hurt, and then they had to sign
the Mavs, the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, like, my theory of this has always just been the league – people always get obsessed with, like, the trends of the league, right? And I understand that to an extent. But to me, the trends of the league are dictated by who are the best players in the league. Like, who are the best players in the league? And especially now, like, sure, like, that old guard is still there, you know. Obviously, the Warriors probably would have won the chip last year if Durant doesn't get hurt. You know, there's still like that generation of players that's still good, but I think that gap is closing, and you're seeing the kind of current crop of younger stars rising. And if you look at them across the board, it's mostly bigs, man. And even like the ball handler types are fours, right? Like Ben Simmons, he's a four. Giannis is like a 4 or 5.
Embiid is the center. Jokic is the center. Towns is the center.
Right. And then you start getting into, okay, like, where does Donovan Mitchell fit in? Like, I don't know. I guess the way to think of it is, I think the guys that we just listed all right there, right? They all have chances to be, they're all, in my opinion, Hall of Fame caliber talents. I'd argue, like, you can argue Porzingis is borderline, Markkanen is borderline, Siakam is not even necessarily borderline, but he's weird. Like, if he plays a lot of games on a winning team, and I mean, the guy's good. Like, he's really good. He might be underrated. And then you got younger bigs too, like Ayton and Jaren Jackson Jr., Wendell Carter Jr., Mitchell Robinson,
Robert Williams III, who's probably as good as Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah, just
better, I would say.
God, yeah, I think so. Once you don that Celtic green, it just elevates your game. And then obviously, of course, how could I forget Jared Allen? He of the negative 8.1 net rating last year. It's just like, you know, the best talents just look like big guys. And then you're like, okay, Donovan Mitchell is good, but how good is he? Devin Booker is good. How good is he?
12-time Tatum is good.
Yeah, it's like, those guys all look like definite all-stars at some point in their careers, maybe even, probably multiple all-stars, all of them. But are they Hall of Fame, game-changing, like franchise-altering talents? I don't think so. Not in the way that Jokic is, or Embiid, or Simmons, or Cat, or any of these guys. Like, I just don't see that. And, I mean, look, like, we shit on Porzingis, obviously, because we're Knicks fans, but wouldn't you say that in a vacuum you would rather have Porzingis than Booker or like Donovan Mitchell? I would.
Personally. I mean, I would have a lot of guys ahead of Devin Booker because Devin Booker really isn't like that good, but that's a whole different, that's a whole different take in podcasts and a whole branch of actually like putting up stats on like literally the worst team in the NBA. Like, how good can you actually be as a player? So that's like a whole different discussion, but. He's like, he's still solid though. I'll give him that. He's still solid. Like, he puts up like a lot of points.
No, yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying in terms of like KP. The only concern, of course, is the injury history. Yeah. That's what, like, pure talent. If that were to stay the same, then yeah, absolutely, hands down KP. But the fact is, I mean, yeah, would I rather have an elite shot blocker and guy who can stretch the floor and shoot above 40% from three? Absolutely. It depends on how you're building that team and what that shelf life looks like.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then I guess just to come back to the Celtics, I don't even know how the hell we ended up here, but I don't know, they like their offseason, there's no way anybody can convince me that it was a good offseason. I don't care like what kind of mental gymnastics you do, it was absolutely not a good offseason. I guess the only way you can do it is if you say that, oh well, Kyrie was already leaving, and but then even then it's like, okay, but they wanted to keep Horford, right? They wanted to keep Horford. And I guess you can argue that, like, the contract he got from Philly is wild, but, like, isn't there some weird thing on the third year of that contract where most of it is non-guaranteed? So, I mean, it doesn't really end up being that crazy of a contract. So they lose Horford, a guy they didn't want to lose. They end up not even really being able to replace him, unless I guess you count Ennis as a replacement, which I don't. I think he's a Baines replacement. And now they just have all these bets. Like, they're betting so heavy on these young guys, which is fine, except they're still in this, like, they're capped out. Like, they're in this weird win-now mode, and they're probably going to be capped out for the foreseeable future because – unless they make big trades because, you know, Smart's locked in on his contract. Jalen is coming up next summer on his contract, unless mm-hmm. they sign an extension this summer, which
yeah, I Hayward's,
think – Yeah, Hayward's locked in for another
and I'm like, and his, 2 years. His max at the time for 2 years, so he's 30-plus. Yeah.
Right, and then, you know,
Tatum's
like,
cap hold is 29.
Yeah. That's 2 years, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying even once Hayward comes off the book, you think you get salary relief, and you don't, because even if they don't pay Tatum, I mean, he's going to
– You get like $6-7 million probably.
Right. It's and they're hard capped too this year because of the sign-and-trade with Rozier.
Oh, that's right. But that was – see, that was – I think that was like probably a good faith move, you know?
Get
Terry, like, look, if he wants to go there and you want the guy from their team, who gives a shit? Like, just do it. And they weren't like they're not one of those hard cap teams that's so close to the hard cap, right? Like, they have some wiggle room, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I guess that one.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, like that didn't seem that just seemed like good business, especially for a team that's burned a lot of bridges. Like, I think they probably learned. Like, I think that Isaiah Thomas thing has. I don't want to say it killed them, because obviously they signed Hayward that summer and they traded for Kyrie and whatever, but. I mean, AD's dad even came out and said, like, he thought that was shitty and that he didn't want his son going there, right? Like, we can pretend this stuff doesn't matter, but yeah, man, if you have, like, Danny Ainge's entire reputation is he'll sell his mother, right, for a better player or for a trade or whatever. And yeah, look, man, that has its value, but can also bite you in the ass at certain points.
Hayward strikes me as the type of person who didn't give a shit about Isaiah Thomas. Like, he loved the fact that he could play for his college head coach. He loved the fact that he could go to Boston, you know, be that guy with a team. Like when I look,
and his wife can be in MAGA country.
So. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't want to say it's political or racial, but at the same time, I don't want to say it's not that. Like, I think there's a very clear distinction between those situations. And again, Gordon Hayward doesn't strike me the type who's like, oh man, IT got a raw deal, I don't want to go there. He's gonna be like, no, I really want to get fucking paid, and this seems like a great opportunity. I'm going from one super white place to another. Let's do it.
Yeah, so I think we covered the Celtics pretty well in that. I think it's when I asked, like, where do you guys see them? Like, how many games do you see them winning this year? Like, where do you see them, like, falling in the division?
Like 46? I don't think they fell off too far in terms of regular season, especially just based on how the rest of the conference looks. But I don't see how they're going to advance in the playoffs.
Yeah, their ceiling is definitely lower. There's no question about that in my mind. I think maybe, like, I don't think their regular season drop off will be very big at all, to be honest. Maybe they win 47, 48. I mean, there's a decent chance. We've seen this with young players all the time, right? That year two can sometimes be a stagnant year. And then year three, you take off, or, you know, you progress more, right? So maybe Tatum takes another leap. I've never been the biggest Jaylen Brown fan. He's definitely better than I thought he would be coming into the NBA, but I've never seen this fucking star potential in him, or this, you know, what was it, 90% of Kawhi bullshit that Zach
90% of Kawhi and Paul George.
Like, yeah, because that was his justification for why they didn't make the Kawhi trade. It's like, look, either you're an idiot or the sources you have within the Celtics organization, but even though you're totally not a fan of the Celtics, despite the fact that you wrote for Celtics blog for like 98 years, totally not a fan of the Celtics, totally not, you know, biased or anything like that. But, like, if that is your stance, I've never seen that at all. You know, maybe like 60% of Kawhi, which is a nice rotation player, which is fine. I don't know. I guess I struggle to see where these dynamic young player leaps are going to come from. I actually do like Grant Williams a lot, who they drafted. I thought he should have gotten much higher than that. So that was a really good value pick for them. And look, I like Carson Edwards, but I know he killed it in summer league, but it's like, that's one of those classic. He's one of the, like, he's the the perfect archetype of player that would kill it in summer league. You know, it didn't really say anything to me one way or the other. I do like him, but those guys are rookies. To be honest, like, how many rookies picked in, what, Grant Williams was like 21, 22, and Carson Edwards' second round pick? How many guys like that are impacting your win total in a meaningful way as rookies? Like, very, very few. You know, Mitchell Robinson doesn't come down. He doesn't come around every year. So I don't know. You could convince me more of like, oh, they're better set now. I think they're in this weird position where Ainge had to save some face, right? So he had to kind of like cap their next 3-4 years ceiling. But you know, maybe the young guys take a leap and like, you know, if Grant Williams is as good as I think he could be and Carson Edwards is, like they could be in better position to make a move a couple years down the line, maybe in trade or something. But yeah, I don't see the ceiling with this team. And frankly, like from where they were 2-3 years ago to where they are now, that's just a pathetic and complete failure of management.
Yeah. I also was convinced that Brandon Clark was going to be a Celtic. I couldn't believe the fact. They had four first round picks and they didn't take him. And yeah, I mean, Grant Williams is a good player, but I think they're both around the same age, but at least that would give you more, this season would have a higher ceiling than having Grant Williams, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I guess for them, it's the other thing is, look, I know we make jokes about Robert Williams. I actually do like Robert Williams. I don't know if he's going to be I don't think he'll be a Mitch-like freak because Mitch is a freak. It's not a knock on Robert Williams, who I thought was a pretty good prospect and somebody I actually was interested in potential trade-down scenarios for the Knicks at the time. But, you know, again, like, look, all these guys could be good players. The odds are, you know, maybe we named like 5-6 guys. Maybe you hit on 3 or 4 of those. Do any of them have franchise potential, right? That's really what we're talking about here. Do any of them have game-changing trajectory potential? I don't see it. Tatum, I loved him coming out of college, and I still really like him. But to me, he just has always struck me more as like a kind of – his ceiling to me looks like a second best player in a championship team, which isn't – like that's awesome. That's not bad at all. But, you know, again, from where they were to where they are now, there's no way you can say it's anything but a disappointment.
Yeah, I would say that. So let's move on. I think we spent enough time on the Celtics on a Knicks podcast. Let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets. So they brought in Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, Wilson Chandler, and D'Angelo Russell is sent out in a sign and trade to the Warriors. And I don't know if they lost anyone else that major other than that. But we know that Durant's not playing this next year, you know, tore the Achilles and everything. And yeah, I think that's it. So they basically more or less replaced D'Angelo with Kyrie. And they added a Taurean Prince. That's who they added as well with the trade. So, I mean,
I thought the Garrett Temple move was like, I actually like him on that contract. I just don't know why that's what they needed to do with that exception.
Yeah, I don't know either. So I know some people are probably going to think we're going to sound like petty Knicks fans because the Knicks didn't get Durant and Kyrie. But, I mean, yeah, the Nets got them, but we have no idea how Durant's going to recover from his Achilles. We just watched Kyrie Irving destroy like the Boston Celtics, you know, one of the darling, you know, best run franchise, you know, in the NBA, according to, you know, a number of writers.
Let's give Kyrie some props for that.
That is true. I mean, he single-handedly, with his batshit crazy conspiracy theories and his moodiness and just – it was a beautiful job. I do have to say, like, the idea of just, like, if you're into chaos and everything like that, Kyrie did a beautiful job in Boston. But so, I mean, they're going to improve because Kyrie is better than D'Angelo Russell. So, like, that's one thing. Like, so they will be better. Hopefully Caris LeVert for them is going to be healthy for the entire season, but we don't know that. We've never seen him, like, not injured. DeAndre Jordan is completely washed, and they signed him for, like, multiple years, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, he was the cost of doing business, basically, right?
Yeah, totally. Pretty much.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's worth it. Like, I would have been – first of all, I didn't want to sign Kevin Durant. After he tore his Achilles, I absolutely had zero desire to sign Kevin Durant. So if we had just done those three moves, signed Kevin Durant, Max Kyrie, and then done it in such a way that we could give DeAndre Jordan 4 years, $40 million, I don't know, man. It would be tough for me to swallow.
Honestly, that would be – if the Knicks did that, that would be stereotypical Knicks of, like, the Isaiah era. Like, that's
it'd be a better, it'd be like a very high end, like a high end version.
It's like the best version of an Isaiah era move because, like, Kevin Durant is like, was, I think at some point, like the best player in basketball. Like, he really was. Kyrie Irving is still an amazing offensive player.
It'd be the meatpacking version of, like, what the Knicks usually do, which is mostly like a really shitty East Village bar version.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, you know, it's like the Knicks get like Antonio McDice and, you know, and Kevin Durant's like, so yeah, I don't know. Like, they're going to make the playoffs this year. The Nets are going to be good. I think their more thing is, like, long term is Kevin Durant going to replicate what he was the past 3 years as, I would say, like, the best player in basketball.
Yo, they're
Achilles injury at like 31, and they're capped out or will be capped out because they're gonna have to do something with LeVert and Allen eventually coming up and Harris.
They extended LeVert.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
it's 3 years, $54 million. Like, it's a pretty decent.
That's not bad.
It's ascending though, so like each year it becomes more expensive. Which, fine, whatever. It's, but it's not like an even, you know, 18. Mm-hmm. It's, or it's like 16 point bullshit, and then 18, and then probably close to 20, probably like 19.7. I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but I'm just doing mental math here. I would assume it's something like that. Look, their biggest problem, their four spot is shit.
Yeah.
Okay. It is.
Who, their four spot, you said?
They don't have anybody. Wilson Chandler is suspended for the first 25 games.
It's Taurean Prince, drug, you know, PED peddling Wilson Chandler, and girlfriend choking Radonis Kurucs. Like, you know, great culture there.
Kurucs, the only one of those guys that is like a legit four is Chandler, and he wasn't good last year.
No, I mean,
he hasn't been good in a couple of years, to be honest, and that's sad because I always loved it, Wilson, but I mean, yeah, I think he's, you know, he's, what is it, that he passed his sell-by date? Is that the saying?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was immovable in Denver, it seemed. Like, it seemed like he was always on the block and could never be moved. And then the moment Philadelphia could trade him for salary relief, they did. Sent to LA.
Was he in that Tobias deal? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, man. I think they will make the playoffs. Like, I think they're, to be honest, them in Boston, funny enough this year, I see them kind of hovering around the same level and fighting for the same kind of playoff positions. But with Boston, I feel pretty good about – I can't see them falling out of the playoffs, right? As long as Kemba is healthy, which, you know, his career, he's been healthy. There's no reason to say – like, to expect him not to be healthy. As long as he's healthy, I think they'll be okay. I can't see them dropping out of the playoffs. Brooklyn has, you know, Kyrie usually misses what, like 15 games a year, 10, 15 games a year minimum. And like without Durant, those 15 games could really matter, like really matter, because you're talking about a team that I think has, you know, let's just say without Durant, 47, 48 win potential, maybe 50, let's say 50, best case scenario, right? 50. Okay. Now you take out Kyrie for 15 games. It's like that. I don't know, man. You could get dicey down there, especially if you have some bad run of injury luck. Like, the odds are, again, like I said, I expect them to make the playoffs. I think they'll probably be battling for a 4-6 seed, something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that disaster scenario definitely exists. I guess it's not a total disaster because guess what? They own their picks now. Congrats. But, yeah, I don't know. That team is very interesting to me. They seem so guard heavy. Like, I don't get, that's why I didn't understand the Temple thing. Because you got Kyrie, you got Dinwiddie. Why the fuck do you need Garrett Temple too?
Yeah, and you have LeVert, and you had young guys like Musa, who was a rookie last year. They also have David Nwaba, it looks like. So, like, they have, like, wings and guards, and they have Joe Harris. So, like, I don't know. They are guard heavy. You could theoretically have Nwaba technically kind of play up, but, like, Nwaba can't really defend big guys, kind of like Marcus Smart can like defend big guys, and Nwaba's like the like discount, you know, goodwill version of Marcus Smart. So, like, I don't know, I don't see it with them, and like LeVert's probably more or less is going to get injured again.
Oh, and LeVert's a guard. We didn't even list him.
Yeah, so like they have just a bunch of guards. Like they're kind of like who was a like their best five players. I don't know if you can actually play them all at the same time.
You can. So, but this, they're going to be, I would not surprise me if they are the worst rebounding team in the league next year.
Oh, they definitely will be.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know, you know, shout out to our good friend James Marcita, who thinks rebounding is totally unimportant, but like, actually it's important. It's particularly defensive rebounding. And Jesus, good luck to them because, you know, Kyrie is not a good rebounder for a point guard. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't really. I mean, I guess in some ways though, the season's a write off, right?
Yeah, because it's basically like Durant's coming back next year, so this year is whatever happens. But I mean, I don't know if they should really think of it that way because, you know, we don't know what Durant's going to be. Like, it's a complete unknown.
The thing is, the Nets have Durant and Kyrie for at worst 3 years. Like, the thing is, I think Durant needs to take as much time as he wants, and we could say, you know, he's not going to play next year, and I could see why he wouldn't, but at the same time, there's really not a lot of time to work with here. Like, if the Nets want to capitalize their window and Durant's healthy and ready to go, I could see them putting him out there. I know, obviously, there are reasons why he shouldn't, and maybe he won't, he probably won't, but it's not like the Nets can really afford to be like, yeah, take your time, come back, time is money, they're paying him $40 million. The following year and it goes up from there. So they, and like you were saying, Sean, they really can't make a lot of moves based on their contract situation. So
just trades at this point.
It has to be, yeah. And I don't see how they can defend, especially you know, the 4-5 position. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, we were saying he's washed, but a lot of it I think comes down to effort, but I don't feel like DJ really cares enough to try. And I don't see him this year being like, oh yeah, I'm on a super team. I'm going to go all out there and win DPOY again. It's just like, it won't matter to him because I think he'll be like, all right, you know what? Jared Allen's not going to play ahead of me. I'm making like four times his salary. That's fine.
No, and then, like the other thing too with them is, so this is something I was thinking about today too. Like, you know, so many stars moved this summer. So many stars moved this summer. And like the star, right, that everybody talks about that is available potentially on the market is Beal. Okay. Now, if you're the Nets, like, do you really need another perimeter guy? Right? Like, if you have KD and you have Kyrie, let's assume KD makes a full recovery and Kyrie, you know, stays being Kyrie. Beal is not the guy you need with them, right? Like, you need a dynamic front court player. Like, what dynamic front court player is potentially available on the market? Okay, it's not going to be Porzingis. It's not going to be Jokic. It's not going to be, and definitely not going to be fucking Embiid. It's not going to be Cat anytime soon because that's literally all they have. Jaren Jackson Jr., absolutely not. Markkanen, maybe, but like, does he really fix what you suck at, which is interior defense and rebounding? Not really. DeAndre Ayton, maybe when the Suns get a clue, like, no. I mean, but even if you can get Ayton, again, he's not doing anything for you to fix what you suck at. So I think they're in a very tricky spot because obviously with Durant, when he comes back, you vault into at least like you're at the minimum a dark horse, right, for a chip. Okay, sure. That's not nothing. But how are you, you know, literally every title team has to make moves within the season. They win titles usually to kind of like fill in the gaps and get them over the top, right? Like we just saw this Toronto where they went out and got Marc Gasol. And why did they get Marc Gasol? Because they looked at the fucking playoffs and they're like, okay, well, we're going to have to play this dude probably named Joel Embiid, and Jonas Valanciunas is not walking through that door and doing that. So we got to go out there and get Marc Gasol. Like, I just don't know if the Nets are looking at their team in season like, look, we got to make a move here to get a guy that can get us, that can kind of just address our needs. Like, who are you getting? I don't know.
The only person I can think of, and I don't even think it'd be that great of a move, but who could potentially be available is Blake Griffin.
Yeah, and it's like, and Griffin is still, like, his value is almost entirely offensive. He's not a terrible defender right, or anything like that, but his value is offensively.
But if you're looking to match salary and someone who won't cost a fortune, like Beal, as you're saying, he's going to cost a boatload. Everyone is going to cost so much fucking money in assets, really. And the Nets, yeah, they finally have their picks, but how worthy are they? They're really not, especially if you're topping out at, you know, 50 wins this year, maybe, and you lose in the first or second round of the playoffs. You're not going to pick higher than 23, 24. So if you're looking at that and trying to attach and think of the future, he at least presents an option, but that he doesn't really mask a lot of what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, even if, like you mentioned, when that with Durant, they're a dark horse title contender. I mean, I guess on paper, but I mean, I don't even see it with them as like even like a dark horse contender because like you're just kind of like looking at like the roster and rounding it out. You're just trying to think like what makes actually a championship team, and you just look at the. Like, the Warriors needed to add Kevin Durant just to beat LeBron James. Like, they had Curry, they had Klay and Draymond. And
Houston almost took them out. And Houston almost took them out the year after.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you take it a step further and you kind of, like, look at some things in a vacuum. Like, Kyrie's not as good as Curry, like, at all. Like, can Caris LeVert be as good as Klay Thompson? Probably not.
No, I don't give no. No. He fuck that. No, he right, definitely
you,
will not.
Okay, but do you get what I'm saying though? Then you're just
yeah. Like, no, right. I'm with you. I understand.
And then you go, like, who's your Draymond? Are you gonna think Torian Prince is gonna magically become Draymond Green? Like, I don't even see it with role players. But they need to redo their entire roster and then hope that Durant has some sort of prime left in him. Like, I don't even see them as like a title contender, even if Durant gets healthy.
But in fair, well, like also, I think the top level. So there's not a Golden State level anymore in the league. Like, there's not a Golden State with KD level, right, that you have to achieve to win a championship anymore in the league. But, you know, to your point, like, you have to be at least as good as the Raptors were last year. I don't know if they, like, it's weird because I think the Raptors' depth gets both overrated and underrated. But, like, you know, they went 8 deep and all those guys, literally every single one of those 8 guys was a two-way player. Every single one. Kawhi, Lowry, Siakam, Gasol, Ibaka, Van Fleet,
Green.
Yeah, like every single one of those guys is a two-way player. They're adding value on both sides. Like, you look at the Nets, Kyrie, he's not adding value on defense. Dinwiddie sure as shit isn't, even though he's big and he probably should. He definitely can't. He can't fucking guard a brick wall. LeVert is fine on defense, I guess. Like, I promise you I haven't watched enough of Caris. I've watched a lot of him in college. Was not a particularly good defender in college. Haven't seen a ton of him with the Nets, mostly because I just don't watch the Nets that much, but he's not, you need all NBA defenders, right? Mm-hmm. Hasn't every NBA champion in recent history had all NBA multiple all-NBA level defenders?
I mean, that's what you need. Like,
they don't have any. Like, they have Durant, who I think Durant's wildly overrated on defense, actually.
Yeah, but he's still good, though. Like, when he's engaged, he's good. He's still good.
He's good, but it's like you need guys that are engaged all the time. You can't have – I don't expect my stars to be engaged all the time, to be honest, right? Like people said that about Kawhi. Oh, his defense fell off. And I'm like, yeah, well, now he's also fucking carrying your offense. So, of course, his defense fell off. But, you know, where – so I don't expect that from KD. And, you know, Kyrie is whatever. He's not going to be a great defender. He's okay when he tries, maybe. But it's like, who are the guys then that are doing the defending when those dudes are not? Because they're not going to be for most of the time. And it's like, LeVert, maybe. Torian Prince isn't a good defender, but he's okay. So you got that.
Well, Kurucs can potentially choke someone on defense. So that could help slow people down.
Jesus.
I get those shots in when the opportunity is just right there. It's got to lay it right up. So
I think the biggest thing, honestly, yes, I totally agree in terms of you need that all defense caliber player. So one of the things I was looking at when it was middle of June, we were trying to figure out, you know, what should we do with Durant? What would we want? Was that if you go back over the last 30 years, I know MVP can be very narrative driven, but if you take the top seven of the last 30 years worth of MVPs, only two championship winning teams did not have a top seven MVP candidate. And those two teams were the Spurs back in, what, 2014? Mm-hmm. And the Raptors. And the reason is because it was Kawhi and a lot of his play in the postseason and everything he was able to do. So, yes, I think it's really important to have those all defensive players, but at the bottom line is if Durant is not back to what he is, and Kyrie has never finished in MVP voting. None of those guys has. I mean, yeah, you've had DeAndre Jordan being a depoy, but if Durant can't be even 75 to 80% of himself, it doesn't even matter that they don't have all defensive guys because they need that star, and without him, it's largely moot for them.
Yeah. There you go.
So, should we move on to the next team? Who's the alphabetical order? Next.
Wait, did you? What did you say? Where do you think Brooklyn's finishing? I think Jeremy said 46 wins. I said 48. What did you say?
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Fucking scumbag.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if everyone's healthy without Durant, they're probably closer to like 50 wins. So, you know, like 47, 48, 49, 50. Like, if LeVert's actually healthy and Kyrie's healthy, and I don't know, like, they could get there, but. I don't see them like staying healthy. Like,
did you factor in their culture and their amazing practice facility and their the best medical staff in the entire fucking history of professional sports?
Oh, right, the practice facility. I did not factor that in. You know what? They may win 74 games this season because of the practice facility. Yeah, I mean, they're either going to be like the 4 seed or not make the playoffs. That's kind of where I see them living. Like, I don't think they can maybe, like, if they're healthy, they can go on a run. They can squeak in as, like, the 7th seed.
I would say, like, my last thought on Brooklyn is, and I think the, from what their line, I think is what I've seen is 45.5. It seems like the bookies are pricing in more disaster potential than maybe a lot of media are. That's just my last thought on them. That's just what that line seems like to me. Cause 45.5 just seems like you're trying to get people to bet the over. You're trying to get action on the over. I don't know. That's just me as a degenerate gambler.
Okay. So we'll move on to the next team. I think that technically would be New York. So I'm just going to ask, Jeremy, a yes or no question. Jeremy, do you think the Knicks had a decent offseason?
Yeah. I do.
Okay. Good. Moving on. We're going to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. So the Sixers, they lost Jimmy Butler to Miami. They maxed out Tobias Harris. They signed Al Horford to quite a large contract. And I don't know if they made any, like, minor moves, really. But, like, the crux of it was basically, like, they lost, you know, they lost Butler. They're bringing in Horford, they're really looking to play like super big, and honestly, like, it could work. Like, I think their giant lineup in an odd way could work, because if Horford could at least like have like one more good defensive season. Like, offensive-wise, they all space out pretty well. So, I don't know. I think it can in a weird way if they may need a different coach. But so, I'll let you guys go from there.
Yeah, no, I'll let Jeremy go.
East is big, man. Yeah, I mean, like, I did love that.
Shout out Mike Woodson.
Yeah. So the funny thing about Horford was that everyone was freaking out about where he would be playing, and I happened to spot this one random post on the NBA subreddit that was talking about how it followed all of Horford's boys who followed these Sixers players, and from there, like, it started to make sense why you would have him there instead. Apparently they didn't even really offer anything to Jimmy Butler. They just didn't want him long term. That's what the sense I got, at least from Dave Early, who's much more plugged into the Sixers than I certainly am.
Seems like a mutual thing too. It doesn't seem like Butler really wanted to be there.
Yeah, and you know, like, I can understand, of course, when so many high usage guys, and that just doesn't seem to vibe with what he wants. So, granted, he had a really great couple of playoff games taking over, but no, I mean, just the fact to get Josh Richardson out of that, it went a long way. I like what they did. I think that they can be a very deep threat. It really comes down, of course, to health. It comes down to Ben Simmons with a jump shot or lack thereof. I also think that the fact that Embiid is going to miss a lot of games, you can still shift Horford to the five, which will help benefit them quite a bit. I agree with you, Drew, in terms of the head coaching. It just doesn't seem to work, but I think they're going to give it another shot for a season, and we'll see from there, obviously. I mean, they didn't fire him, so he's obviously going to still be there, but I like the James Ennis signing, and it'll be interesting to see how Smith plays. But I mean, overall, it's like they're the team to beat in the Atlantic for sure.
Just realized before Schwinn, you get to say anything, that Josh Richardson is actually on the Sixers. So I guess that was a trade, like a sign and trade with the Heat. So they do have Josh Richardson, who's solid. Like, he's probably going to be better in this role than he was as, like, the main guy in Miami. But, yeah, I just wanted to add that in there, that they do have Josh Richardson. And they don't have J.J. Redick. Where did J.J. go?
Pelicans.
He's in the Pelicans?
Yeah.
Oh, for some reason, I just completely forgot about that. But, okay, Schwinn, what do you got?
So, I don't I feel like their actual ultimate ceiling is lower with Horford than it was with Butler, but like they're just built to beat the Bucks, man. I don't see how the Bucks beat them if the Sixers dudes are healthy. I don't see how there's so much size, and Horford is like the guy who kind of gives Giannis trouble. And sure, Giannis shit on his life last year in the playoffs, but like, there's a big difference between Joel Embiid backstopping the defense and Aaron Baines. Like, Baines is nice. Embiid is dominant. So they've got that. I think they can just bludgeon their way through the East mostly. And look, here's the thing is, I don't know how to feel about Brett Brown, because I haven't been his biggest fan. I think he's kind of like boring offensively. Redick is a big loss, by the way. That's a bigger loss maybe than people want to talk about, just because that guy's he's probably one of the five greatest shooters of all time. And it's not just that he can shoot, it's the type of shots he can hit on the move running full sprint. It's just crazy. I like Josh Richardson, but he is not J.J. Redick, man. I don't care what advanced metrics you throw at me about his defensive value and blah, blah, blah. Like, J.J. Redick really did a lot for them. Though I think Josh Richardson might be a better fit in terms of, like, the fact that he can kind of operate as a secondary ball handler while nominally playing the point, even though Ben Simmons is the point guard. So that's nice for them. Look, I haven't been Brett Brown's biggest fan, but I thought he got shit on last year in the playoffs for shit. Like, what do you want this? He played Joel Embiid, like, every minute he possibly could in that series against the Raptors. And basically with Embiid on the floor, they outplayed them. I think they were, like, plus – there was some crazy stat about Game 7 where it was, like, with Embiid on the floor, they were plus 14 or something like that. And he played 45 minutes, and they lost the game by two in regulation. So, you know, do the math. Like, you can understand maybe why they thought that getting Horford in was the play for them, if they knew that Butler was gone and they didn't really want to keep him in the first place. You know, getting in a guy who can not only just play next to Embiid, but can also step in for him at the five and be a quality five, especially in shorter bursts. That's a really good get. So they had I didn't like their offseason at first at all. But I think I definitely was over. They're in win now mode, right? That's basically what it is. They knew they're in win now mode. Those guys are ready to win now. Embiid is good enough. Simmons, he may not be good enough, but you know, maybe he can shoot a jumper because apparently he's done that in pickup games this summer. Who knows? As long as he's not just hanging out in the dunker spot. As long as he's not just hanging on the dunker spot in every crucial possession of fourth quarter games in the playoffs, that would be a huge change. Either way, like those guys are ready to win now, and they just were in a position where they're like, fuck it, like let's just go for it. So I think when I was initially viewing their offseason, I'm like, oh man, that Horford contract could have sucked in like 2 years maybe. But, you know, if they win a ring, which – they definitely could win this upcoming season or the year after. Who cares? You know, it's not going to matter. So it's a gamble. I don't know if it was the best gamble, but considering what they had to work with. One thing I will say is I think that Tobias Harris contract is an underrated, horrible contract. I get why they had to give it to him, but that is a shitty contract because Tobias Harris is not worth a 5-year, $180 million max. No fucking shot. Absolutely no shot.
Any other team, though, it wouldn't have made sense. Almost any other team.
Yeah, it makes sense. Don't get me wrong. It makes sense, but it's like this is like the situation where, like I said, when I first looked at their offseason, I was like, I don't like this. But I was focusing so much on like year three from now and year four from now and year five from now. It's the type of contract where like you said, like it makes sense because they're trying to win now. So it's like you just got to keep what you got, the guys you have. You wouldn't have been able to replace Harris effectively, so you pay him to keep him. He's not a bad player. He's obviously a very good player. But it's like, you know, if they don't win in the next 2 years, I think that Horford contract's going to look atrocious, and I think that Tobias Harris contract is going to start being like an albatross. So that's just my thought. And it's not because I think Harris sucks or anything like that. He's a very good player. He's just incredibly overpaid.
So I didn't realize J.J. Redick wasn't on the Sixers anymore when I was like, their offense could – like work really well because I thought JJ was still there. Tobias Harris like shot well last year from three, almost 40%, but I don't know how real that's going to be. And Josh Richardson isn't a 3-point shooter either. Embiid takes a lot of threes, but he can't make them. Their offense could be really clogged if no one's going to be making threes. So I think that's actually something we should be looking towards, like moving forward, like throughout the season and even the playoffs. And probably Tobias Harris over Jimmy Butler, even if Butler didn't want to resign with them, could be an issue because they were probably a crazy, you know, they were a Kawhi Leonard making a crazy three to probably getting to the finals. So I think we should keep that in mind when, with the Sixers move forward, and we can kind of end it there. If you guys want, we can move on to Toronto.
Yeah, I don't
sure.
Know. Yeah. It's interesting. Tobias is an interest. I guess the last thing I would say is their five-man lineup, presumably that you would close games with, is going to be Richardson, Simmons, Tobias, Horford, Embiid. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Offensively, I'm not sure how that works. Defensively, I think they're going to be a juggernaut, though.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So let's move on to the Raptors. We'll save maybe the most interesting for last because they won the title and they lose their best player, who was arguably the best player in the playoffs and had one of the best runs that we've seen in quite some time, in Kawhi Leonard. And they didn't really replace him with anyone. So, but like we saw Pascal Siakam emerge as a legitimate like player, like a two-way player, and I don't know what to – are they still the best team in the East or at least one of the best three teams in the East?
They're the third best team in the East.
You have them as third. You have them as third best.
Yes, 100%, no question. I think that people are. I mean, we're just talking about. Like, I think they had the same winning percentage last year without Kawhi as they did with him. DeRozan, who I've never, I think, is kind of like the best empty stats guy you could imagine. They won, what, 56 or 57 with him the year before. They've consistently won in the 50s. Their defense is still going to be sick. Their offense is obviously going to take a hit, but they're not going to be shit. I mean, are they? Did they really lose? We're talking about his regular season. Did they really get 10 games worse in the regular season by losing Kawhi? I highly doubt it. Highly, highly doubt it. And Danny Green was good, but, like, you know, he's no great shakes anymore. And they didn't even have OG, right? They didn't have OG for a lot of the season. So, like, I think OG could take a leap. I'm pretty bullish on the Raptors as far as regular season performance goes. Their over under is like 46.5. That's one of my, like, personal favorite overs. Anyway, I don't know. Who the fuck cares what they do this season? They won a fucking championship, man. Like, I really don't even know what to say about them. The only thing I would say is, the danger of betting over with them is I can totally see Masai blowing this shit the fuck up.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, like, I was talking about this with one of my friends the other day, but if I was Denver, I would be trying hard to trade for Kyle Lowry because I think he's, like, the perfect guard for that team. And he would help them out so much. He'd help out Jokic so much. I don't know. That's kind of a random tangent, but, like, there are a lot of, I mean, all these guys expire, right? Gasol, Lowry, Ibaka, those are the three biggest contract guys, and they are all coming off the books after this year. So, you know, maybe Masai is just going to move into, like, look, I need to get assets and start building around Pascal and OG and Van Vliet and see what I can get. That wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah, especially because I didn't think they could finish top three. And then I looked at the standings again, and it makes a lot of sense why you have them there. It's just, yeah, I look at that team. The problem is that they've got some great players, but they're all on the wrong side of 30. You know, I mean, like, that doesn't – being like 30, 31 doesn't mean you're done. But what, Lowry's like 34, Gasol's 36, Ibaka, I mean, he's 31 – I think the inflection in my voice dictates that there's, like, some questions about that, but for the sake of it, we'll say he's 31.
Oh, boy.
no, but the point being is that, yeah, I completely agree that this team, as constructed, I don't see him re-signing a lot of these guys. And even if you're competing, like, he's shown he can do anything. He's willing to do anything, what it takes to look in the long run, to expand your ceiling to the highest it can be. And sure, this team could have a nice season, and it doesn't really matter because, as you said, Schwinn, they won championship last year, and that's totally fine. But to let all of those guys just walk at the end of the season, and you're left with Siakam, a high pick, which is fine because they've certainly found value with that pick, but, you know, non-lottery picks. Their entire team last year was comprised of non-lottery picks. But it just seems like the opportunity to trade players and get something back is too great to just be ignored. And because of that, that's why I see that over-under exactly being where it is, because I think there's a lot of skepticism in terms of what Masai – how ruthless is Masai going to be? And I think he could very easily be ruthless.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, it's been rumored for a while that Masai has always kind of wanted to do a rebuild but has never really had the opportunity in Denver or Toronto. Just the timing never worked out and – the team situations. I mean, his first moves when he came to Toronto, it definitely looked like he was trying to tear that shit down. And then he kind of stumbled into, oh, wow, without Bargnani, like, we are actually – and without Bargnani and Rudy Gay, like, we're actually pretty good. Like, we're a pretty good team now. So he kind of stumbled into that. But, you know, I think he probably does want that challenge of, like, hey, look, like, I can build something from the ground up and not just make the best of what I inherit. And – you know, if I was a GM, I would imagine that is kind of a I don't know. It's a challenge. It's like one that you want, right? It's one that you would, if you believe that you're a high end top level GM, it's one that you'd back yourself to do successfully. So yeah, I don't know. I get, like I said, to me, the only concern about them this season, if they just kept it how they keep it, I think they're the third best team in the East. If they don't, I mean, but, you know, is that really incentive? Because what's your future? Like you said, right? What'd you say? They're all over 31 or something. So,
yeah.
And Ibaka's probably like fucking 68 for all we know.
Oh, boy. Are we really going down this road?
Ibaka is older than he says, man. Calm the fuck on. The dude started declining. His production started declining at age 25. It's almost like his birth certificate is, he's probably 4 years older than what his birth certificate says. Like, come on, man. Let's be realistic here. That doesn't just happen.
Yeah, I am going to not engage in this type of skepticism when it comes to foreign players with their birth certificates from certain places. I'm
well,
just
to be,
not
you're already
going down that road.
To be fair. Like, you're already in it. So now you might as well just continue and state your case.
That's my case. Look, if he's not, I don't care.
No, I meant Drew. Like, Schwinn, we've made our points. Drew, you're in it now, dude.
All I'm going to say is that his birthday is September 18, 1989, and he
you're
is
saying Serge Ibaka is 2 years younger than me? I call bullshit.
I am saying that Serge Ibaka is the same age as me, and I am not going down that path.
So I guess what we found out today is that Drew draws the line at quite, like, being skeptical of certain players' birth dates, but he is also fine with making jokes about a player being accused of a crime way before he's ever convicted of it. That's what we discovered today.
I'm fine with NBA players from Latvia not giving them the benefit of the doubt when it comes to treating women and what they do. Like, I'm pretty safe to assume that's what they do. Like, that's what Kurucs and number six do.
All 10 of our Latvian listeners are definitely never listening to this podcast again.
I mean, that's fine with
me. That was the final straw.
Look, if that's the case, if they're going to be like, if they want to defend Porzingis and Kurucs, go right ahead. Don't listen to the show. I'm fine with, taking those hits and defending my fellow 30-year-old Serge Ibaka. I'm doing it. I'm defending him.
Are you sure that Serge Ibaka isn't my age at this point?
Well, I don't think he's 17. No.
Yeah, he's not 17. That's so he's fair. Definitely. But yeah, I didn't really realize the rebuild potential with Toronto, because I feel like if as is, they're going to be a top three team in the East. Like, they were really good, and they pretty much like kept their depth. But no, you're right. Like, the idea of like they're not going to win a championship this year. So why not just blow it up because Kyle Lowry's old and Gasol's old? So like, yeah. So I didn't really consider that, and that's actually a good point. Did I run out of any Atlantic teams? Do you want to talk about the Wizards, who are definitely in the Atlantic Division?
No, zero. Fuck the Wizards, man. Actually, whatever. The Wizards are. I feel pretty ambivalent about them. They need to make significant moves this year, one way or the other. Like, I just don't see what they're doing. It's like, you just gotta trade Beal, or, you know, I guess just accept you're not gonna do anything for the next couple of years. I don't get it. They should trade Beal, but maybe they're just putting on a strong face because, you know, just pretend that you definitely aren't gonna trade him and see what that yields. I guess the only thing is to, I just want to point out how much intra-division movement there was though in the Atlantic. So Kyrie went from Boston to Brooklyn. Marcus Morris went from Boston to the Knicks. Cantor via Portland went from the Knicks to Boston. Horford went from Boston to Philly. That's quite a bit. I feel like maybe I'm forgetting a couple. I don't know.
I mean, those are the main ones though, and I haven't really seen any that type of like interdivision movement of like really like both important like star players and like really important role players in a really long time. Because you just don't see that. You just don't see guys like leaving, that, especially for someone like Horford, who were just like went to the Sixers, like a team that the Celtics, like, usually do a good job of beating. And he's like, nope, I'm going.
You remember when there was, like, that week period leading up to free agency where everybody was trying to figure out who the mystery team was for Al Horford?
I do.
Mm-hmm. I was so convinced it was, like, the Pelicans. I really wanted it to be the Pelicans.
I mean, they got J.J. Redick, apparently, so they got someone.
They did Derek a lot. Favors. Yeah, they got Favors, so that was a good
pick. Also, two other players who did the intro division, Trey Burke by way of Dallas, and, and then obviously this is the biggest move of them all. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson went to the Raptors.
Oh man, he's so fucking good. He's gonna bring so much culture to the Raptors because they need that. They need that Brooklyn culture instilled in them to get championship to level.
It's gonna be really tough for him though because the training facility is really far away.
Yeah, it's in a whole other country. Yeah. Are we sure Toronto even has training facilities in Canada?
No, I don't think they're allowed.
Or do you think it's just ice rinks and that's it?
Yeah. Do you think it's like socialized training facilities and everyone has to share the same training facility in Toronto? Like the Maple Leafs and the Blue Jays and the Raptors all have to share one thing for the collective and the greater good?
If there's one thing I know, it's that every hockey team has their own training facility for sure in Canada. Also they signed Stanley Johnson.
That's not impressive.
Yeah, it's not. And it's not even in the division. So who gives a shit?
It isn't, but it is a
thing. Which Arizona lefty is worse, Stanley Johnson or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson?
Johnson's a righty.
No, he's a lefty.
No, he's a righty.
Stanley Johnson shoots with his right hand?
Yes.
I don't think that's true.
Okay, well.
It looks like the answer is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yeah, I'm going to say Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. All I will say is that I will bet you $16 billion that Stanley Johnson shoots.
Yeah, I owe you $16 billion. So according to the Basketball Reference, he shoots with his right hand.
Yeah, you can just Venmo me.
I'll Venmo you? Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you guys want to cover any other teams or cover anything?
So, Jeremy, what's going on, man?
Yeah, Jeremy, don't you want to tell us a story about someone you met?
Hello.
Sure. Yeah, so as you guys know, there's a very good chance that some stars were coming to the Knicks this year. And one of my – we'll call him a friend. He works for a company that has dealings with Vegas, and he was told by someone very high up that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were coming to the Knicks. And, of course, we all believed – there's a very good possibility this happens. So we tried to get season tickets. Well, it turns out a lot of other people did the same thing. Fortunately, they did not wind up signing here. We did not get dealt with a full or half season plan. Unfortunately, if you want to look at it, we have a quarter season plan. So as first time Knicks season ticket holders, we really haven't done much with it, obviously, because the season hasn't even started. But I got a call saying, hey, if you guys are around, Larry Johnson is going to be having lunch with some season ticket holders. You guys want to come through? And so a friend of mine and I went, there's five of us who have four seats, and the two of us went there and had a great meal, just us sitting next to Larry Johnson the entire time. And there's a guy to the left of us who was asking ridiculous questions. Like 20 minutes in, he goes, hey, LJ, what do you think of James Dolan?
Oh boy.
And everyone's looking at it awkwardly. And he's like, yeah, well, what'd you think of the Oakley thing? Like, are you fucking serious? And then he FaceTimes his mom. He's like, yo, I'll just say hi to my mom. And it was just the most awkward fucking situation. But he was really cool. He had some really nice things to say about Don Nelson and Jeff Van Gundy. Yeah, he also thinks that Zion might struggle a bit to start the season. Just based on...
Yeah, because he's fat now.
Yeah. No, yeah, we were talking about that. It was like the po' boys and jambalaya and the gumbo, everything. It's like, yeah, that's food down there is the worst thing to have just because of how hard it was for students, for players there. So, yeah, it was a cool experience.
What did he eat?
Everything was served a la carte. So he had whatever we had, but he said he's cutting down on meat because I think it was back.
Right, so what did you get? Okay, so what were the food options there? Like, what were you guys eating?
So we started off with a very easy salad, not much to it. And then we had some toasted baguettes with avocado and egg. And then we moved on to some sort of pasta with red sauce, good chicken, potatoes, And then there's an eggplant parm thing. And
ooh.
It was a breaded eggplant stacked with tomatoes, stacked with mozzarella, stacked, and then like keep repeating. That was pretty good.
And so then, you say tomatoes, not tomatoes.
Tomatoes. No, I'm.
Wait, it's everyone knows it's really pronounced tomatoes. I say tomatoes all the time.
Yeah, but you're an uncultured swine that lives in Boston. Of course, I expect you to say.
I say I live in Brookline, and I grew up in.
You the live in state. Boston. You are MAGA. You're MAGA as fuck.
Yeah, I wear that Make America Great Again hat everywhere I go.
Everybody knows that people that do yoga are MAGA as fuck.
Yeah, I actually wear my MAGA hat backwards in yoga every single time I go. It's a great look. Fuck, what was I about this?
You wear it into Anna's Taqueria?
Oh, wow. How'd you get that one?
I went to school in Boston.
Where? What school?
I went to high school?
Yeah. I actually went to middle school up there. No, high school back in the city.
With a high school there?
Oh, no. I went to Brandeis high school in the city, and I went to college in outside of Boston.
Jesus.
What school?
All you guys should be
embarrassed. I'm talking to Drew. Brandeis.
You guys should be embarrassing yourselves.
Isn't that the school that closed down for, like, fraud?
No.
Jesus.
I think it was Newberry College or something like that. I just remember
Hampshire College is starting to potentially close down.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember that there was this when I was working at Trader Joe's, there was this new guy at the time. And I was like, "Oh, so what are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I'm in school, but like my school shut down." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "You clearly went to like a scam school. Like, what do you mean your school is shutting down?" I was like, "Who chooses a school that's going to shut down?" But yeah, so I don't know. I forget the name of this school.
Was he at Harvard?
Brookline Community College?
Yeah, Brookline Community College. Yeah, no, he was at Tufts. Tufts closed down.
What was the school that Robin Williams is at in Good Will Hunting? Isn't it like Bunker Hill Community College or something?
Well, there is a Bunker Hill Community College, though. I was making a joke. I forgot that what's his name? Matt Damon is actually writing on the board at MIT and not Harvard. So I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's MIT. And it's also, like, clearly a high school. That's the best part of that. And, like, that guy's accent, his professor's accent, I don't know why. It just bothers me so much throughout that movie. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" I'm like, "Are you British or are you, like, European? What's going on, man? Like, let's talk about this."
You know, for a movie that did a really good job with the Boston accent, yeah, that guy just wasn't nailing it. Like, it's... Yeah, the Boston accent's a really interesting one because it's not as, like, overt as people think it is. It's actually quite subtle for the most part, but now and then it comes
up. Look at Drew here fucking defending Boston.
Listen, man,
it's not as bad as you guys think, you know? It's just ridiculous how much of a homer. Next thing you know, he's going to come back with a fucking Enes Kanter jersey.
You mean the player who's definitely not as bad as defense as people think he is? That Enes Kanter?
Yes. Yeah, I haven't listened to that pod yet. It's with Lowe and Simmons, but apparently Simmons has a whole thing about this, and it's like, dude. Actually, Macri just had somebody on his pod, some Celtics guy, and I was just listening to it today, and he was like, "Yeah, look, I don't think Kanter's just – he's like, he's not great, but, you can hide him like Portland did." And I was like, "Man, I think sometimes – maybe we should just look at the larger sample here." Maybe we should just look. Look. Props, I can't take away what Enes Kanter, quote unquote, did in the playoffs, but, the majority of his career kind of would lead you to, I think the safer bet is that he sucks at defense. That's just
I just love how it seems like every time the season starts, when he's with a new team, people always talk him up, like, "Oh no, it's not gonna be that bad, it's fine," and then, November's like, "Okay, well, it is what it is, we'll deal with it," and then by the time December rolls around, it's like, "Yeah, get this guy off my fucking team. I can't live with him." Yeah, he did well with Portland for a brief stretch, but it's not like he was also being asked to play that role to begin with. Nurkic shattered his leg, and then the ref stepped on him, and, like, of course you're going to have to turn to someone, and it's going to be Kanter.
Yeah, and I think they just had some decent matchups work for them. Like, Russ can't shoot. OKC in general can't shoot, right?
Yeah. So
he could play. Adams had a real stinker of a series too, to be completely fair. And I guess you can give Ennis some credit for that, but fuck him. I'm not going to give him credit because this is a Knicks pod, so I don't need to give him credit. And what, then they played Portland after that?
They played the Nuggets.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, they played the Nuggets. And then, yeah, Murray was like so up and down. Like, it was literally every other game with him in the playoffs. It was like one game I was like, yeah, you know, I always liked Jamal Murray. And then the other game I would just be like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I never said anything good about Murray.
He's 22. So, you know, I mean, like,
I think he averaged like 25-4 or something like that in the playoffs. Maybe 24-3. I don't know. But for a 22-year-old making his first appearance in the playoffs, I didn't understand. Like, there was just this meltdown over Murray every time he'd have a bad game. And it's like, look, man, I don't really – what are we crying about here? He's a good player. He's 22. Probably get better. Generally, it happens. But then again, I also have discovered recently that Kevin Knox has actually done – he has no chance of improving, and Frank has no chance of improving, and Dennis Smith Jr. had a chance of improving until he came to the Knicks, and now he has no chance of improving. So there's a lot of stuff I'm still learning about basketball.
Yeah, I don't know why he spent this entire summer reshaping his shot when there's no point because he's not going to get better anyway. So why do you try to get better if you know you're not going to be better anyway?
That's a great point you made. That's a great point. Hey, do you guys want to hear Jokic's numbers against the Trailblazers?
They're silly. They're fucking ridiculous.
So he dropped – his first game was 37-9-6.
Jesus. Is it 9 rebounds or is that assists?
9 rebounds. Yeah, so it's going to be points, rebound, assists. Then it was 16-14-7, 33-18-14, 21-12-11.
Was that triple overtime? Was that quadruple overtime game?
I think so. Then it was 21-12-11, 25-19-6, 29-12-8, and then 29-13-2. Yeah, Ennis Kanter did a great job of slowing down in that series. Like, really underrated defender
there. He didn't even close half the games. They had to fucking bench his ass to put in Zach Collins.
It doesn't even make – like, I don't understand any sort of argument that he can make that Ennis Kanter is an underrated defender. Like, even if you take into context, like, he's pulled out. But if you want to assume that Kanter played most of these games, just look at Jokic's numbers. Like, he just destroyed him. Like, I don't get it. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
I can already tell you the top one most annoying single storyline that we're going to have to hear the entire regular season is how the Celtics lost stars, but their culture is so strong now. And everybody feels good and everybody's happy and everything is great on their route, on their way to like 46 wins.
Yeah, 46 wins and a first round loss to like the Raptors with 12-time Tatum taking Kobe mid-range shots, you know. Have fun with that. Have fun with that, guys. Like, that's going to be the end result. Because you're right, that's going to be the narrative. It's going to be Kemba's so much better than Kyrie culture-wise, which, I mean, he is. Kyrie's a fucking nightmare. Supposedly, Ennis Kanter is great for the culture, but, you know, he isn't. And that's all you're going to hear. And then the end result is going to be a disappointing season. And we're going to be like, yep, I told you so. Like,
okay.
And Kanter's then going to play behind Poirier. And then he's going to throw him under the bus. And everyone's going to look over and be like, oh, no, you know, he just really wants to play. He's a competitive player. It's fine.
Because he's on the Celtics now, everyone will suddenly remember that, like, oh, yeah, he's not good. So this is smart by the Celtics. Real quick, the other storylines for each team. The Raptors is going to be, are they going to blow it up or not? Philly's going to be, they look so clunky. What's wrong? They're going to be that team, I think, for a lot of the season. It's like, what's off? Something's off here. We got to figure it out. The spacing sucks. They're going to be the crisis team, but I think they'll be fine and they'll probably win the East, in my opinion. And then who's the one I'm forgetting? Oh, Brooklyn is just going to be like, oh, they don't have Durant. They need time to gel and stuff. And once they get it together and Kyrie starts leading his team, it's going to be great.
Yeah. Brooklyn's going to get all the excuses. Just kind of how Boston kind of got excuses for a good part until people turned on Kyrie. But like,
it took until like game 65, I think, last year or something like that, where people were like, hey, look, maybe the Celtics just aren't that good.
Yeah. So like the Nets are going to get that treatment. They're just going to be like, it's okay. Wait till Durant gets back. What's going to be the Knicks narrative this season?
They failed. They failed. Have too many guys. They have too many guys. They failed. That's it. It'll be that. Like, what other narrative could it possibly be? In fairness, like, I do get that, but like, I think I said this on our last pilot set. Like, if they had just not signed Peyton and Portis, I would be extremely happy with what they did. Not extremely happy, but like, I'd feel a lot better about what they did this offseason. I kind of think those two dudes were superfluous and not necessary. Yeah,
it was definitely over the top.
Yeah, I didn't think they needed those two guys. But, you know, they signed them. They don't really hurt them long term. I am just – if they win, like, 30 games, I'll be happy. 30 games and the others get better, like, and they improve and they play a lot of minutes. I'm very much on board with that season.
I think that they'll have a win pace that's higher than that, but then they'll flip one or two guys and then – you know, everything will, they'll start to scale back a little bit. I was thinking with the Nets, the biggest storylines also could be like how Kenny Atkinson reshaped and saved Kyrie Irving's career.
Yes!
Insane numbers. It's like, you know, like he had D'Angelo Russell and he turned him into an all-star. It's like now how Kyrie Irving is an early MVP candidate. It's like, all right, it's fine.
They did that with Kyrie in Boston too, and I never understood that. It was like, oh, well, now he's playing for Stevens and he's taking him to a new level. And I'm like, dude, he just won a fucking chip. Like, what do we, like, he just did the same shit in Cleveland. I don't know. The funny thing to me about Boston has always been that I actually do think Stevens is a really good coach. A bit, definitely overrated, but he is a really good coach.
I'd take him over Giannis just for what it's worth.
So who would be your top five then for that if you're taking Stevens over Giannis? Like, is Brad Stevens the number one pick?
No, there's still more coaches.
There's more coaches?
Yeah. It's Stevens, it's Pop, it's Quinn Snyder for sure.
Quinn Snyder.
Spolstra. And
every time I see Quinn Snyder, I just think that he murdered his entire family while on cocaine.
Oh. Yeah, every time I see Quinn Snyder, I have Snyder to just do tons of cocaine. I'm like, you know what? I really want to watch Scarface.
Quinn Snyder. Do you think he's going to get overrated this next year? I know we're not really talking about like other teams, but I feel like he's going to get like really overrated this year, because I feel like the Utah Jazz are going to be like really good, and then they're going to be like, oh my god, Quinn Snyder brought everything together finally. I feel like that's going to happen, and he's going to get like that overrated treatment that Stevens has right now.
I don't know. I think he's been rated for so long now that even if they win more games this year, which they're going to do, my guess is that he won't get that over the top praise. You always got to look for. I think Stevens is he might win Coach of the Year this year, and it's gonna be really annoying. Because it'll be like, oh, they overcame so much turmoil, and like, they have all these young guys, and they won 45 games. It's gonna be fucking stupid. I guarantee it. All that, he got like zero shit last year for the fact that he couldn't manage any egos at all. Whatever. I don't know. Maybe we should probably end this here.
We're done. Yeah, now we're just, rambling. We can just end it, here. Jeremy, do you want to plug anything?
I've got an article coming out around training camp. Figure it's a little too early to drop. So other than that, I that's about it for right now.
Schwinn, you want to plug anything?
I just was on a general NBA podcast. The second part of it dropped this week. It's just like a ranking of the top players in the NBA and kind of a lot of theoretical discussion on
what's the podcast name?
The Bench Mob. If you want my timeline, I retweeted it earlier today, so it's there. So check it out.
All right. I guess it's my turn to plug something. I'm going to plug the Posting and Toasting show hosted by Drew Steele and Ashwin Ramnath. It comes on every Monday, so definitely check that out. I want to plug The Sopranos. That's a great show that you guys should watch. I want to plug The City of Boston. and all its great universities. And
disgusting. Disgusting.
And it's very diverse food culture here that's totally amazing. Yeah, that's about it. So
you notice he didn't say Brookline, he just said Boston, which proves that he's lumping Brookline in with Boston, which means that Brookline is Boston.
It's true. It's a good checkmate.
There you go. You guys got me after I downed a whole bottle of wine during this podcast. So that's it for this episode, and we'll see you next time.